that's our focus is on the game. We think they're all important, but you know, obviously it's separated in divisions, so we think that's important that we play well and do and practice well and do our things. Not that the other weeks aren't, but it is a division, and you want to make sure that you play well in the division.
It is a big division game tonight, the Chiefs and the Chargers from Mexico City. Monday Night Football, pregame at 6 o'clock, kickoff around 7:20 tonight on Z96.3 The Lake. Chiefs could, in essence, end the Chargers' playoff hopes with a win tonight. Chargers win. Now suddenly the Chargers have a chance to win the division. The Chiefs would be in second place in the division, a division that everybody expected the Chiefs to walk through for the most part. And so big game tonight. We'll see how the Chiefs' defense performs. That'll be interesting to watch. Mahomes looked pretty good last time out. And hopefully the Chiefs don't shoot themselves in the foot like they did over and over. But they're playing a team that typically shoots themselves in both feet. So Chiefs and Chargers coming up tonight, Monday Night Football. We'll hear for more from Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes on all of that. But first, local sports. We have all-state volleyball selections have been released.
Yes, and you can find all of them at ncsports.com. Kansas Volleyball Association brought that out this weekend. And Shay Larson, a boy for the second straight year, is on the all-state team, a first-team pick in Class 3A. Boy, very well represented on that 3A team, as you would expect for a team that finishes runner-up in state in 3A. Jessica Meyer and Hannah Pearson were both second-team selections for the Letty Trojans. And also on the honorable mention team from Concordia was Chloe Conway there in Class 3A. Again, you can find that pool team at ncsports.com. From Class 1A in our area, Jaden Bowden of Thunder Ridge was a second-team selection, and Bree Freeling of Smith Center made the 2A second team. So those are the area athletes that were picked for the Kansas Volleyball Association All-State teams released over the weekend.
All right, high school football, we have two teams moving on.
Yeah, we do. A good night Friday night for the Osborne Bulldogs and Smith Center Redmond as they move on to the semifinal round of their respective classes in the playoffs in 8-man Division II. Osborne winning over South Barber. They'll face Central Christian, who beat Thunder Ridge there Friday night in Hutchinson. So Osborne against Central Christian this Friday night. You can hear the game on Katy Country 94 and katycountry94.com with pregame at 6:30 and kickoff at 7. So stay tuned for that here later on Friday. And then also Smith Center winning over Sedgwick 21-10 there on Friday night in Class 1A quarterfinals to make it to the semis. They will host Plainville coming up at 7 o'clock on Friday night, a rematch of a game that Smith Center won earlier this season. And I believe that's the 11th time they'll meet in the last six years, I think. There's been a lot of meetings between Smith Center and Plainville, and this one is the most important one for this season. We'll see what happens on Friday in Class 1A.
Yeah, best of luck, Smith Center and Osborne, and we were hoping to be Osborne Thunder Ridge, but Thunder Ridge just too big of a hole and almost dug out of it.
Yeah,
against Hutchinson Christian at 30 at halftime, came back, had a chance to win the ball game, but heard there's some issues, didn't recover some onside kicks. There's something Hutchinson Christian found on film, I guess, and so Thunder Ridge was close to coming back with an unbelievable rally. Kind of like what Oklahoma did to Baylor, which was pretty amazing. We'll talk about that coming up in a little bit. But it is Central Christian. It's good news for Osborne from the standpoint of, one, they don't have to have a rematch. Two, they get a host because they were going to have to go to Kensington. So good win for Osborne on Friday night. And then they got Axtell Hanover at the top half of that bracket. I think Axtell is going to win that. Although I wouldn't put it past Hanover to win since Axtell beat them earlier in the year and snapped their long winning streak. You could have Hanover Osborne in the state championship again last year, 58-50. Osborne won. So Osborne found a way. I kind of felt like they would without Darian Holloway, but it'll get even tougher from here on out.
It will, and they got to clean a few things up that we saw from Friday night, but I think having that whole week and then that game without him, they've learned a lot about themselves, and I think they'll be okay here coming up on Friday from that aspect.
I think it was good for Smith Center to get tested against Sedgwick, 21-10. That was a battle. They were down 3-0 there, I think, in the first quarter. So that was a good win for Smith Center over undefeated Sedgwick, now a team that they're familiar with, as we said, who they beat pretty easily earlier in the year, but that doesn't mean anything now. Both teams, I'm sure, are improved from earlier in the year. So best of luck to Smith Center and Osborne. All right, just to give you an idea of how fans are, and this person, if they're listening, they probably won't want to talk to me ever again. But I'm using this person as an example because this is the way fans are. And if you're one of these types of fans, if you know you are this type of fan, listen, I can't change the way you think, but you might. But just listen to this story, and then you may say, "Oh yeah, I would never do that." And you think about, "Oh, I have done that as a fan." So Beloit played the number one team in the state on Friday night, Andale. Andale, I think, is clearly the best team in 3A, and I think they will win it all. They might not, but they looked the part of the number one team in the state. And Beloit went right down the field on the first drive, looked impressive, then they had a turnover, and then they really never had another great opportunity to score the rest of the game. Andale has an all-state linebacker. I didn't say all-league. All-state linebacker returning and an all-state defensive back who is a stud. Okay, so let me put this in perspective. So I'm talking to a Beloit fan over the weekend, and the Beloit fan says, yeah, that was a tough one on Friday. I said, hey, and I said, Beloit didn't play that badly. I said, Andale just is better. Andale is probably the best team in the state. I said, they've got athletes, they've got studs. I mean, there was a perfect example of Beloit had a Vinnie Paulin open down the middle, and the All-State DB dove and nearly picked it off, made an unbelievable play. Now, that's a touchdown against everybody else in the state, but not in that situation. So was it a bad play call by the coach? No. Was it a bad pass? No. Was it a bad route? No. Sometimes you just have to pat the other team on the back and say, nice play. But that's not how fans are sometimes, because it's always your own team's fault. So Beloit lost 42-0. The game was not quite that lopsided. It was 14-0 at halftime. They gave up a kick return to start the second half, and that was kind of the backbreaker. It was 21-0, and Beloit couldn't get anything going offensively. But it was 0-0 at the end of the first quarter. So Beloit was stuck with them, battled the physicality in the first half. Then I think they wore down. And keep in mind, Andale's got 63 kids on the roster, and so they're playing juniors and seniors on special teams. Beloit's got to play sophomores on special teams just to give their starters a little bit of a breather. They don't have the luxury of having 16 seniors and 17 juniors. Andale had as many upperclassmen as Beloit had in their entire roster almost.
Yeah.
So that puts it in perspective. That's a big advantage, no question. Not making excuses. It's just a fact. So Beloit lost. They lost 42-0. There was no one play in this game that you would say, well, this play would have gone Beloit's way. Beloit would have won the game. No, they wouldn't have. Andale was just the better team. Okay, they had more speed, they had more depth, they eventually, I think, wore down Beloit a little bit, but their defense was fantastic. And they were able to only have to have 7 in the box to slow down Beloit's run, whereas usually you bring 8, 9, now Beloit can throw the football. So this Beloit fan tells me after we're talking, I said, you know, Andale's really good. I said, I didn't think Beloit played that bad. He goes, why didn't we, I don't understand why we didn't pass the ball more. Did you watch the game? Because I know this person was at the game. There was nobody open when Beloit tried to pass the ball. You know why? Because there's an all-state defensive back covering your best receiver, and there's an all-state linebacker, and they had two over-the-top safeties, so they didn't have to put 7, 8 guys in the box because that's how good up front. Yeah. So now they got more guys in coverage, and you wanted to pass it more. Were you complaining about Beloit passing the ball more after Colby? Because in the Colby game, Beloit won, right?
Yeah.
They threw the ball 10 times. You know how many times Beloit threw the ball against Ando?
10
times. So I didn't hear anybody after the Colby game, well, why didn't we throw the ball more? Because you won. So then you don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You lose, well, why didn't we throw the ball more? Well, here's the thing. It wasn't there. It was not there. We talked about it. Todd talked about it during the broadcast. Guys were not getting open. And you just, yeah, sure, you can drop back and pass. One, if you're getting pressure, well, there's no sense in keep passing if you have time to throw. Or you have time to throw, but nobody's open. And then you got to force it. Is that really the way to go? Probably not. So then I heard, well, I don't understand why we don't have, they had 3 backs in the backfield. It's tough to figure out what they're doing. We should have more than just 1 running back in the backfield. I'm like, okay, first of all, you have 2 backs in the backfield. You have a quarterback who is a runner, and you have a running back. So you have 2 backs in the backfield, okay? And I don't know if this person watches any NFL football, but he says, well, that just makes you really predictable. You're just really predictable. Everybody on the other team knows where the ball's going. No, you don't. First of all, you can run play action and throw the ball. 2, you can do the quarterback read option. You fake it to the running back. You go with the quarterback. Guess what? The Beloit had the exact same offense, the exact same personnel against Colby. Was anybody whining they didn't have 3 running backs in the backfield after that game? Nope.
No.
Do you know what the Chiefs do? The Chiefs have one of the best offenses in football. All right? The L.A. Rams last year had one of the best offenses in football. Do you know how many running backs they have in the backfield? Help me out, Dusty.
Usually not any more than 1.
1!
Sometimes none.
They have 1! If you watch the National Football League, there are no more fullbacks, hardly ever. Yeah. I mean, the Ravens sometimes will run out of the eye. You don't see the eye formation. It is pistol. It is quarterback shotgun. It is spread. even Lamar Jackson, Baltimore, they run the ball a lot, but they run a diversified set. They don't always run power. They run power, but they don't have a fullback all the time. For crying out loud, this is where the game is. That's where the football is. Yeah. So because one team beat you 42-0 and they had three backs in the backfield, well, then that means you should run the same offense that you've not run all year long. And suddenly in the playoff game, that's you're supposed to throw three backs in the backfield just to mess them up. You know what's going to mess you up? Your own team. When you try to change your whole offense, when you made it to the state quarterfinals with that offense, okay, if you think it's a little bit predictable, you have the right to that opinion. But the Kansas City Chiefs, all right, they have one back in the backfield. They don't use a fullback unless it's a short yardage situation. They do not use a fullback. Is that hurting their offense, Dusty?
It doesn't seem to be.
The defense sure doesn't seem to be able to figure it out, and the Chiefs scored 30 points a game. Wait a minute. You got to have three backs in the backfield. You got to have three backs so they don't know where it's going. You know what else they don't know where it's going? When you have four wide receivers and one running back behind the MVP quarterback. I mean, it's one thing if you only have one running back and the quarterback doesn't move at all. He's just a lame duck like Phillip Rivers, okay?
Yeah.
But that's still, they still got diversity. They can throw the ball. They can play action. They run draws. You can run screens. I heard somebody tell me the other day, well, we should have run more screens. Yeah, you could have run screens, possibly. I'm going to tell you right now, those kids for Andale didn't miss tackles in the open field. So you run a screen, you think it's going to get you big yardage, it might get you three or four. I don't think it would have gone for anything big either. So this is what happens. When your team loses, you want to nitpick and you want to point out all the things they did wrong. Yet they did all the exact same stuff the week before and beat an undefeated team, a state-ranked team on the road, and nobody said anything about, we should have passed the ball more. We need more backs in the backfield. We're too predictable on offense. Then you play number one team in the state, and they're just better than you, and suddenly you're doing everything wrong. I'm like, come on, man. Like, it's one thing if everybody's running that type of offense. If everybody's running a power T with two, three backs in the backfield and a mobile quarterback like Andale, I get it. I get it. And Beloit's the only team running the spread or running the pistol formation. Okay, I understand it. That's not the way it is. 90% of offenses nowadays, watch the NFL, watch college football. There are hardly any teams nowadays that run a standard I power formation. When they do, they rarely run it. Maybe short yardage situations. The NFL is different. College football is different. That's why you have Alabama LSU now 46-41. You know, that used to be a league that played defense. Well, guess what? It isn't anymore. It's not anymore. I mean, look at Oklahoma. Do you know how many backs Oklahoma has in the backfield? Sometimes zero. And nobody can stop it. I mean, you don't have to have a certain amount of running. Listen, I can put three backs in the backfield. They can't run the ball. What does it matter?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just...
The front line's not blocking, you know.
If
and I'm not saying that's the case with Beloit,
I'm going to tell you something. You put three backs in the backfield, you know what you're doing? You're saying you're going to run the ball instead of passing, so you're predictable that way.
Very predictable.
Because now you're double tight. Andale was predictable. Andale was super predictable. Double tight end, they're going to run the ball. Double tight end, three running backs, wing T formation, they run the ball. They're going to run the ball. And they still ran it. But you knew they were going to run the ball, so should they change their offense if they lose next week? Because, well, come on. It's pretty obvious they're going to run the ball. They don't have any wide receivers. Come on, man.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Like Keyshawn Johnson would say, come on, man.
Yeah, football, I mean, people adapt and change things, and not everything's going to be the same. And not every offense from every team is going to be the same. And not every offense from what you historically have done is going to be the same. Have you guys watched Smith Center the last 4 or 5 years?
They've evolved.
They run their wishbone out of the pistol.
Yeah.
A lot of times. Mm-hmm. You know, it used to be just get under center, run the wishbone. They have it in the pistol now, and it's still just as deceptive, but they've changed some things with the way they do it. And, Smith Center was super predictable when they
won state championships. They were super predictable.
Yes.
They never threw the ball.
Yeah.
But you couldn't stop it. It doesn't matter. I mean, sometimes it matters if you're predictable or unpredictable, but if you can be predictable and still run it down their throat or throw it on them anyway, who cares what formation they're in? Who cares how many running backs in the backfield?
Yeah.
Who cares how many wide receivers are in the formation? The bottom line is, can they stop you? Can they stop you? Smith Center, for many years, could have yelled out the play before the snap, and they would not have been stopped.
Yeah.
The Chiefs sometimes, I think, could sell the play, and they still would not be stopped because you have progression. One read, two reads, three reads. You've got all kinds of options. That's what this fan was trying to say is, we needed more options. Well, first of all, your passing game was ineffective because nobody could get open because the other team is really good, one of the best defenses in the state the last 2 years. That's why you couldn't get open. But somehow it's the play calling's fault. No, Sometimes you can call every play perfect. You got the right play calls, but you just simply are not as good as the other team. It happens. It's okay to admit the other team was just better, especially when it was 42-0. That's what blows my mind. Like, what? So if Boyd would have ran three backs in the backfield, what would the final score have been? 42-7? I mean, what impact would that have had on the game? I watched the game. Todd watched the game. I'm pretty sure Todd would agree with me on what I'm saying right here. We even talked about on the broadcast how they weren't able to get separation, and that's why you're not going to truck it 25 times when you can't get separation and get open. What's the point? Yeah. So you do what you do best. Guess what Beloit does best? Run the football. You just don't go into a game and all of a sudden change everything you do because you don't score on your first drive. You don't suddenly panic and freak out. That's what fans are for. But coaches aren't supposed to do that. Matt Nagy last night, I thought, although supposedly Trubisky's hurt, pulled his starter with 2 minutes in the game down 10 and went to a backup. I don't know if I'm buying it. That seemed to be a little bit of a desperate move. But usually coaches are not going to panic. All right?
Yeah.
And they know the game better than Dusty. They know it better than me. And they know it better than the fans. And, yes, you can say, well, you guys talk about on the show about how they did this or did that. You know what? I understand in regards to Andy Reid last week, 3rd-and-2. I would like more options. That's what this fan is saying with Beloit. Well, I would have liked more options. Well, Beloit had plenty of options. It's just that those options were not working against a really good football team. And sometimes it's okay to just sit there and say, listen, we got beat.
Yeah.
It's okay to just leave it at that.
It is. I mean, you know,
we should have passed
it always
the ball.
Hurts.
You know how many times you passed it? 10 times. How many completions? 2. Total of 7 yards. So it's not like you didn't try to pass it.
Yeah.
You know, I can understand if at the end of the game you ran it 40 times, you got shut out, and you threw the ball 2 times. Why didn't we pass it more? I get that.
Yeah.
But they did. They passed it just as much as they did last week.
Yeah, it is. And you know, like I said, I get where it comes from because it hurts.
Yeah.
You want the kids and you want your team to win all the time, no matter what the circumstances are. And you'll come up with no matter what kind of way for the game could have gone better in your mind just to make it.
If we would have scored on that first drive, we would have won. No, wouldn't have. I hate to say it, but you wouldn't have. You wouldn't have.
Because there's so many things that go into it.
Would have been a different game? Would have been closer? Yes, probably.
Yeah.
Would they have won? Come on. No. I know. They wouldn't.
No.
Okay. I'm sure the fans are doing the same thing with K-State's game, which we'll get to here in a moment. KU at Oklahoma State over the weekend. Oklahoma State rolls 31-13. Remember when KU's offense was really good for a few weeks? Yeah, that's not happening right now. Under 300 yards of offense against Oklahoma State, who's not a great defensive team. Carter Stanley struggled. He was benched in the third quarter. I don't think he appreciated that very much based on his comments afterwards. Said he didn't learn anything for being benched, which I don't think you do. In that situation, I don't think you learn anything for being benched. You didn't play very well, and so the coach's son went in, who, by the way, looks like, no offense to Manny Miles, but he looks like a fullback. He does not look like a quarterback, and it took the broadcasters on the TV broadcast 3 plays to realize that Carter Stanley wasn't in the game. It's like these two guys don't even look the same.
No.
Whatever. Good announcing. Good job by the. They also talked about the color commentary in the KU game on TV. Said a shout out to Kwame Lassiter Sr. Kwame Lassiter died. So that's great that the announcers are all on top of it.
Yeah.
Anyway, KU wasn't on top of it either, and they didn't get their offense going. They lose 31-13 Oklahoma State. It wasn't even that close.
Well, should we start that stuff earlier? And this team feels a lot differently today. We got to work. We got to go back to work. We got to start again. And we do that, and we find that team that has scoring drives, and we'll be fine.
Well, KU's got to win the last 2 games and hope there's not enough teams to fill the bowl spots to get a bowl. Miles returned to Oklahoma State, but it wasn't a pleasant return in regards to the scoreboard.
There's some wonderful people here, and I did have some sincere feelings for Mike and the many administrators that I know and some of the coaches. And just it was nice to come back into the stadium now. I also had got a feeling for when Bullet got let loose. We did that a lot here. We let Bullet loose on some opponents, and now I had to feel the opposite, to feel Bullet come roaring out there after they scored against my team. It's not the same.
No, it's not the same. No.
I love the end of that. It's not the same.
That's pointing out the obvious. KU's 3-7, 1-6 in conference play, and they're more than likely not going bowling. You know, they still get 4 wins. That'd be an improvement over last year. The offense was looking good there for a while, but Carter Stanley struggled. He's still their starting quarterback, even though he got benched in the third quarter at Oklahoma State. And in fairness, Carter Stanley did not play well. Okay, I'm going to move on to K-State. K-State loses West Virginia. You know, last week you said, I don't see how West Virginia wins this football game. I said I thought it could be a nail-biter because I think KU was due for a bit of a dud, although I thought K-State would find a way to win it, and I thought they were going to. On the final drive, I thought they were going to go down and score and win the game. I really did, and then Skylar Thompson underthrew an open receiver, Dalton Schoen, although it had to be a really good pass, but that's what quarterback's supposed to do, and he underthrew it. It was picked off, and that was the ball game. K-State, I thought it was a flat performance. I think K-State was due for that. I hear a lot of K-State fans upset with the lack of focus and mad at the coaches, and then they got K-State fans mad at the helmets they wore because they went to the cat logo, and that was a time when K-State was bad in football. Listen, if your argument right now is K-State lost because they went to throwbacks and they have the cats instead of the Power Cat logo instead of helmet, you're clueless. I'm just going to throw it out there and be mean. You're clueless. That has nothing to do with the football game, okay? You know what? You go back and look at the different color schemes. K-State's lost lots of games, and that's color schemes. I mean, let's go ahead and, I mean, it's ridiculous. K-State lost this game because they weren't really ready to play right off the bat. West Virginia was fired up. They know they have to win out to be bowl eligible, so they technically had a sense of urgency. And K-State was due, I think, for a letdown. You can blame the coaches, you can blame the players, but don't blame the changing of the gear. That's ridiculous and silly.
I can't even, like, it's just go there with it.
People, fans were freaking out before the game about wearing that stuff. It's like, come on. It has nothing to do with it. Chris Kleiman on the first half focus for his team as they lose to West Virginia 24-20.
The penalties were definitely a lack of focus, without question, and we addressed that, and I thought we were better in the second half. But, their one play, we pressured, and they won in man coverage. That's going to happen sometimes. We challenged the guys at halftime to have better focus and better discipline, and we did in the second half. But still, you still got to make plays. That's what it comes down to. This game's about playmakers making plays, and ultimately they made a few more than us today.
Chris Kleiman, overall thoughts on the loss to West Virginia on Saturday?
Obviously, disappointing loss. A game that West Virginia earned the victory and deserved to win. I thought they outplayed us. And all that being said, we had an opportunity late in the game to almost steal a victory. So disappointed in a number of things. But obviously, we've got to move on. We've got to move forward. And that's what we talked about in the locker room, is this one's going to hurt, and we had an opportunity to win. Didn't get it done. It's our own doing. And there was, we're not going to point fingers, because whether it's a coaching staff, we made some errors, offense made some errors, special teams, defense, everybody made their errors today.
Penalties, couple of turnovers. K-State outgained West Virginia by over 100 yards, 421 to 319. They ran 77 offensive plays and only scored 20 points. That's not good enough. That's not good enough. That'll get you beat. When you have that many plays from scrimmage and you only score 20 points, that's not good enough. We're talking about KU's offense, not good enough. That's not good enough for K-State. Averaging 3.2 yards a carry is not good enough. You know, this team is pretty – to me, we can simplify this. K-State's very simple. They run the ball well, they're going to win. If they don't, they're in big-time trouble. And, Skylar Thompson, his numbers look nice overall and what he was able to do throwing the football, 24-39 for 299, but he threw 2 interceptions. So that negates some of that. And that means you're trailing. The whole last drive, you had to throw the football, obviously. That tacks on some yards. And you had possession time in your favor, 35-25. But the great equalizer, turnovers and penalties, mistakes. And that's what K-State had. They had too many of them. Yeah. And as Coach Kleiman just said, deserved to lose. And they did. And so then I have a fan that's a K-State fan I talked to over the weekend. We're not even going to beat Iowa State. Like, what? I'm like, oh, my God. Why aren't you not going to beat Iowa State? Well, I go, it's at home. We're not going to beat Iowa State. I'm like, you beat Oklahoma at home. You don't think you can beat Iowa State at home? We just lost West Virginia. So?
Yeah.
I mean, it was a flat performance. You don't think K-State's going to be up for the senior day? You don't think they're going to be a little bit more focused for Iowa State than West Virginia? I'm not saying Iowa State's going to lose. I'm not going to say K-State's going to win. All I'm going to say is the fact that you say we aren't going to beat Iowa State, they're not Alabama. Okay, they're not LSU. Iowa State has four losses. You don't think they beat Iowa State because they just lost to West Virginia after a few weeks ago you beat Oklahoma at home. I'm confused. Please, yeah, somebody help me out. Please help me out. How can you immediately jump off the wagon after you lost to West Virginia? You're like, when you beat Oklahoma, we can win the Big 12 now. We might win 9 or 10 games. You lose to West Virginia. Well, I thought we could win 8 or 9 games. Well, that's out the window. So I countered, and I said, well, what were you wanting? What did you expect before the year began? Would you have taken 7-5 or 8-4? Well, yeah. Then what are you whining about?
Yeah.
But I get it. That's what fans do. I get it. You expected to win this game. And you should have. But there's a lot of people would say you shouldn't have beat Oklahoma, but you played your best game of the year, and Oklahoma might have overlooked K-State a little bit that day.
Oh, for sure they
okay?
did.
Well, K-State overlooked West Virginia. People forget players and coaches are not robots. We see it in the NFL all the time. For crying out loud, the New Orleans Saints lost at home to a 1-7 team last week, and the Saints scored 9 points. The Chiefs lost to a Titan team that they should have beat. It happens. It's human nature to have a letdown against a team you think are good. You read the press clippings. You hear the media. You know West Virginia's 3-6. Every K-State player knew that. And so they go in thinking, well, you know, we'll go in trying to win the game. It's not like they're not trying, but the focus is not there. They're not all geared up, amped up for Oklahoma. They're not seeing the trash talking from Texas or Oklahoma or wherever it may be or KU and seeing the Les Miles video, okay? They're fired up for those games. But West Virginia's 3-6. We don't, man, whatever. They changed quarterbacks. That worked for them. You know, that's something you didn't expect. Not a lot of film on the guy. That hurt K-State. If it was Austin Kendall, I'm thinking K-State probably wins. So there's so many things that go into this thing. And then after you lose one game at home to a team you should beat, I get it. But you know what? Many people, before the season, you would have said a win against West Virginia and a loss to Oklahoma. So it cancels each other out, I guess. K-State's 6-4. They win two more games, they're 8-4. They go to Lubbock. That's a game they should win. I'm not saying they will, but they should. They'd be 7-4, and then they beat Iowa State at home. You're 8-4. And then you go win a bowl game. Oh, my Lord, 9-4. Unbelievable year. If you lose the next two, oh, my God, where is this program headed? We're 6-6, and we lost our last three, and what's Klieman? I told you Klieman wasn't the right guy for the job 3 weeks ago. Klieman's great. I can't believe I didn't think – I can't believe I didn't believe in the system. This guy's – win the dang day. Woo! It's just the way people are. They jump on and off and on and off and on and off the wagon. And the bottom line is you just lost the game. You beat the number 5 team or whoever it was at the time, Oklahoma, wherever they ranked, at home. You which would you rather have? Would you rather have the regular wins you're supposed to have? Would you rather have a win over West Virginia and a loss to Oklahoma? Or would you rather have a win over Oklahoma and a loss to West Virginia? I'll take the latter. Because it creates excitement around your program when you beat Oklahoma. Yeah. Yeah. Beating West Virginia doesn't create excitement around your program. But you beat Oklahoma, no matter where it is, or Texas or whoever, that creates excitement around your program. So listen, if the record is 6-4, and I told you before the season, Dusty, Wildcats can be 6-4. Which one you'd rather have, a win over West Virginia or Oklahoma? You would tell me?
Oklahoma.
In a heartbeat.
If I can beat Oklahoma any year, I want it.
I can live with a loss. If I can beat Oklahoma Kansas,
like, yeah.
If I beat Oklahoma and Kansas, I can live with a loss to West Virginia.
And there's all those people out there that say, beat KU and you made my season. Nah, for me, it's if you beat Oklahoma, whatever else happens is gravy for me, man.
Listen, you'd beat Oklahoma, Texas, and KU. Yeah. That's the perfect season. Yeah.
And they almost did.
Weren't
that far away from this. Just been a roller coaster ride, and sure. That's what you expect in the first year of a new coach.
It's the first year of a coach.
And
people forget
and
that.
So, yeah, I mean, we set expectations too high twice this year.
Sure.
Because Mississippi State is not good.
No.
We figured that out. Right. But at the time, it felt like a good win, and the expectations went to sky high.
Uh-huh.
Have a week off, you go to Stillwater and play not good at all.
Nope.
And you
Baylor,
lose that
you can't
game.
Score.
And then Baylor, you can't score. But then we find out Baylor's actually a pretty darn good football team.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you don't worry as much about that one. And then you move back, and now you have another bye week. But then you win two in a row, and one of them is against Oklahoma. And then
so
you
now
beat
you're
going
to go to the Big 12 title.
Right after that, you beat KU after that high. And so now you're feeling so, so good about everything. And then you fall back down. It's a roller coaster ride. I got out of the stadium. I'm like, can somebody just let me off of this roller coaster season? I'm getting sick going up and down here.
That's what makes it fun.
It does, but at the same time, you know, you always have those expectations that you put too high in the beginning.
But you know what a boring season is when you beat everybody you're supposed to beat and you lose to everybody you're supposed to lose. You know what's boring? Bo Pelini in Nebraska.
Yeah, that's boring.
That was boring,
for sure.
And that's part of the reason he got fired.
For sure. This game Saturday, I just felt like they got the three and out early and then hit him with the play action and got the long touchdown pass right away.
Which that's right then and there, that's probably where the
lack of focus. And I think that's where they lost focus. Mm-hmm. That defense came out on that second possession.
This is going to be an easy day.
It's like, oh, man, we're just going to roll this team.
Yep.
And then they lost focus.
Yes.
And they're up 10-7, and the kid misses a field goal, but Trey Deshaun hits the center before he can after he snaps the long snapper, and they get the penalty.
There's
and West Virginia
mistake.
Scores on a third and long touchdown to take the lead. Mm-hmm. You know, those are those things where it was lack of focus. Nobody wanted to ask Kleiman that in the postgame until I got the mic, though. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, did this team lack focus? Because I have not seen that from your team this year.
You're the one to ask that?
Yeah.
Good for you. Nobody else wanted to ask that?
Everybody's just like, what went wrong? You know, the standard, what went wrong?
Because
like,
everybody's scared
they
to ask
scored three
anymore.
Touchdowns on third and long. And
third and 22, the game winner.
You had a penalty on a missed field goal. I said, did you feel a lack of focus from your team in the first half? And then that's when he answered it. And I'm like, somebody's got to ask him a real question.
Absolutely.
Here. Because he'll appreciate it, too.
Sure.
And he did. And he answered it.
Good question.
Just like I wanted to. And I'm just like, this, because I hadn't seen it from, now if I'd seen it from his team this year, then I would have been the standard, another game like this, you know, what happened. But that was something that I had not seen from K-State this year, and I wanted to know about it. Like, what was it? Did they have a good week of practice? What was it?
Excellent question.
And they did. He's like, we seemed focused all week, but I really feel like that quick hitter.
Yeah.
Three and out, quick touchdown on the first
play.
That was
so easy. It's going to be easy.
We're going to roll this team.
It's going to be a good day at the office.
And then you let your guard down, and it was over.
Yep, I agree with you. And it happens. And it happens in sports all the time. At any level in any sport, you see it.
Yeah.
Even a baseball game. Well, we don't have to worry about this. You get a three-run homer in the first, and you think you're going to cruise. Next thing you know, it's 4-4 in the eighth.
Yeah.
So, and your offense kind of goes dormant because you think, oh, we got Verlander on the hill. We're good.
Yeah.
We got Greinke on the hill. We're good. We got Strasburg. We're good. Next thing you know, it's a game. So I'm with you. I'm with you on all that. And thanks for asking that question so we can get a great soundbite for the show. That was well done. So K-State's got Texas Tech. That'll be an evening game at 6 o'clock coming up this weekend. And KU's got a morning game. I forgot who KU plays coming up this weekend. Don't have it in front of me, but it's Baylor's the last game. Is it Iowa State that they've got next?
I
think that's right.
I
think that's right. Let me pull it up here. Iowa State. It's at Iowa State. They got Baylor to close it out. So so KU in the morning, 10:30 pregame on Z96.3 Lake, K-State primetime on FS1, 6 o'clock at Texas Tech. The Big 12 was a little bit nutty this weekend. Oklahoma was down 28-3. Baylor was kicking the you-know-what out of them. It looked like Oklahoma's playoff chances were done. It looked like Baylor was legit. You talk about a place that was amped. College game day was there. They were on the map. Everything was going perfectly. It was the perfect night for Baylor. And then halftime occurred. And sometimes it happens. The worst thing that can happen is halftime when you're cruising. And Oklahoma made adjustments, and Baylor did not. Oklahoma controlled the second half. They went nuts. Their defense did its job. Baylor only had, I think, 20 snaps in the second half or something like that. Oklahoma stayed on the field. Jalen Hurts was the workhorse, 27 carries, 114 yards. Oklahoma, the crazy rally, come back to win, down 28-3 at one point, and they win 34-31. And in essence, I think just eliminated the Big 12 from playoff consideration from this standpoint. Now, if Oklahoma wins out, I think they're certainly going to – I think they will find a way to make the playoffs somehow if they win out. And they will play Baylor again, by the way, in the Big 12 title game because everybody else has three losses or more. Baylor and OU have one. So unless there's a complete collapse here by Baylor or Oklahoma, that's what you're going to have, which will be an interesting rematch. I don't think it'll be as close the next time around, but I could be wrong. But Baylor had everything going for him, and then somehow it falls apart in the second half. And just like that – two quarters of play, you go from, wow, this team's legit, they're going to get a marquee win, and people are paying attention, going, wow, maybe they should be in the playoff, and now all of a sudden, after that second half, they're done.
That's what we figured would happen, you know, that's Baylor.
Well, they didn't figure it'd be a close game, most people didn't. But
by the end of it, you know, we figured Baylor's going to lose, so
and they did,
gonna win.
And they did, and that's that. So Iowa State beats Texas on the last second field goal. I have to admit I enjoyed that, 23-21, good for Matt Campbell, he seems like a great guy. TCU edged Texas Tech, another good one, 33-31. TCU keeps their bowl hopes still alive. I don't know what Tech's got to play for now. Doesn't Tech have seven losses now?
I think so, yeah.
I think they do. So that could be good for K-State coming up on Saturday night. Nebraska falls to Wisconsin 37-21. Listen, I watched this. Nebraska's offense much better in this game. Adrian Martinez played better. Dedrick Mills ran the ball, I hear him, for almost 200 yards. Wisconsin supposedly got great defense, and Nebraska did some good things, but a couple of their drives, especially in the second half, stalled out inside the 10, and that's what cost them. But what really cost them is they can't stop the run. And that sounds like the Chiefs and Oklahoma Sooner defense. Seems to be a kind of a contagious disease through the Midwest. Yeah, Jonathan Taylor, you want to shut him down, right? Last 2 years, 200 yards rushing. This time, over 200 yards rushing.
Yeah.
He's consistent against Nebraska. Nebraska at least didn't get blown out. Scott Frost says his defense has to get better.
No, it hasn't improved the way we want it to. If it would, we wouldn't be where we are as a team with our record. There's good things happening. We need more pieces. We were short some pieces today that weren't healthy and weren't out there. We need some more help for those guys. There's great opportunity for recruits to come in and help us. There's some other things I think we need to get fixed as a staff, so it's on all of us. But it needs to be better. If we can get to a point where we're giving up less than 30 a game, I like our chances where our offense is going. But we got to get there on both sides.
Before the game, Scott Frost got a two-year extension. You may say, well, why would he get a two-year extension? He's already signed through 2024. Now a two-year extension to 2026, and his record at Nebraska prior to the game was 8-13 in 2 years, now 8-14. And so people, I see, K-State fans, KU fans, I saw it on social media, making fun of Nebraska like they're giving up. That's people don't understand the situation in Nebraska. That when people, this is what national media do, that don't understand the situation. Listen, I don't know the situation with the New York Jets, and I'm not going to pretend to know that I know what's going on with the New York Jets.
Yeah.
But I do know what's going on with the Kansas City Chiefs. All right, I know what's going on with Nebraska Cornhuskers. I don't pretend to know what's happening with Iowa Hawkeyes. I don't. I don't pretend to know. I don't act like I know about that. But I'm going to tell you, it's okay to just be quiet and not have to put something on social media every single time you have a thought that pops in your head. All right? Nebraska's no longer in the Big 8 or Big 12. All right? Why do you even care? If you're a K-State and KU fan, why do you even care whether Nebraska uses a two-year extension of Scott Frost? You shouldn't care. It doesn't even affect you anymore. So why? Why do you throw out this, well, Nebraska just apparently is giving up? No, they're not giving up. First of all, think about this for a second. Florida State has an opening. Did anybody know that? Florida State has an opening. They fired Willie Taggart. Bob Stoops apparently is not going to be going to Florida State, which we said that all along in the show. Okay, do you want to take a guess as to who may have been on their radar?
Scott Frost.
He was at Central Florida. He was on Florida State's radar 2 years ago, and Nebraska, that's why they hurried and gave him a whole bunch of money and backed up the Brinks truck, because they knew Florida State was interested in him then. So why wouldn't they be interested in him now?
Yeah.
That's why the extension happened, people. It was, listen, we think you are the guy. We don't think you're leaving, but we're going to make sure you're not leaving. We know you're 8-13, but we know you're going in the right direction. At least that's what Nebraska administrators feel. Plus, what's the alternative? Who are you going to fire him and hire Willie? Going to hire Willie Taggart? I mean, Willie Taggart's available. Charlie Weiss is available. Maybe they'll hire Charlie Weiss. That'd be great. Mark Mangino's available. Maybe Nebraska will hire him. But for people like KU and KP, I saw KU and K-State people taking shots at Nebraska for giving their coach a two-year extension. You know what? I think it's refreshing. Because first of all, I don't think it was necessary, because I don't think he was going anywhere. But if you have any thought that he might be going somewhere, it's probably smart to do it. If that's the guy you believe in, I get it. You make sure you have him locked up. You make sure he's happy to where he stays and he finishes this thing through. And it is a process. And Nebraska was in not very good shape when he took the job over. Many people believe Nebraska. There are still people that are in the Big 12, K-State and KU fans I've talked to, that still think Nebraska is a really good football program. They have not been paying attention for the last 10 years. But they pay attention when the coach gets an extension, and now they're the experts on, well, Nebraska's just giving up. No, they're not giving up. They paid a ton. You know what giving up is? Hiring Charlie Weiss. That's giving up. Giving up is hiring a guy and paying him $500,000 to coach your team to save a lot of money. That's giving up. Spending millions of dollars on Scott Frost is not giving up. If anything, it's that you're all in.
Giving up was hiring Mike Riley is what it felt
like.
You know?
Willie Taggart got fired after 20 games. All right? Chad Morris at Arkansas got fired after 20 games. You don't think Chad Morris, Willie Taggart would appreciate a university standing behind him saying, listen, I need more time than a year and a half? Scott Frost has that support. And people are making fun of it from KU and K-State's perspective, which I find funny because KU should shut the bleep up because KU's got a team that can't even have a winning season and is and has been a joke for years. So that cracks me up. And for K-State fans, why are you worried about it? It's not like you guys are undefeated either. Okay? And there are people ripping your coaching hire when it happened and, you know, saying things about Bill Snyder. He's washed up last year, which, yeah, I'm sure Nebraska fans, there's somebody that said that as well. I get that. Yeah. Trust me. But don't worry about what's happening up there. Nebraska's not in the Big 12 anymore. Why do you care Scott Frost gets a two-year extension? I mean, you might wonder, wow, he's already under contract 2024. That's a weird situation. They're 8-13. But if you know the situation he inherited and what he took over, it is going to be a process. Now, I thought they'd be a little further along in year two than they are. I'm not going to lie to you. And it might not work out. Scott Frost might be the biggest dud in coaching history. It might be true. I think he's still going to figure it out. But I think he needs time. And 20 games is not enough time. But apparently at Arkansas and Florida State, that's it. You're done. Yeah. You better hit a home run hire when you fire guys like that. After 20 games, who really wants to go to a university when the previous coach was fired after 20 games? What, you know what really hurt Nebraska? What coach wants to go to Nebraska after your coach get fired after winning 9 games? That hurt Nebraska to find a new head coach. Yeah. Because if 9 wins isn't good enough, God forbid what happens if I come in and win 8.
Yeah.
That started the downhill
hurt
for Nebraska. Right.
Like 2 times.
Yeah, but Pelini won 9 games.
Yeah.
He didn't beat the teams. He got to beat the big-time teams. Well, he beat everybody he's supposed to beat, got blown out against. That was a situation where he'd been better off beating Ohio State and losing by 7 at home to a horrible Northwestern team. That would be like K-State beating Oklahoma at home, but then losing to West Virginia in a game they should win. That's what Nebraska wanted. They were okay with 9-4, 9-3. They're okay with that, but they weren't okay with they weren't beating the top dogs in the Big Ten. Yeah. Thus, we got to get a coach that can, and they haven't even come close to finding that person ever since.
They weren't beating the top dogs in the Big 12 or the Big Ten under Pelini.
Last time they had a conference championship, let me repeat, 1999.
Yeah,
20 years ago. So Nebraska hasn't been good for a while in football. And yet, K-State and KU fans treat it like, you know, like they're making fun of them, putting Nebraska down, and they give their coach an extension. If nothing, Nebraska should be applauded for at least being all in and supporting their coach. Because if I'm a recruit and I go to Nebraska, I'm at least going to go, that coach can be there for a while.
Yeah.
Whereas if I'm going to these other institutions, I'm thinking Florida State has fired their coach. How long is this coach going to get? How long is this coach going to get at Arkansas? Whatever the case may be. What's Nebraska? You know, it helps now they're behind them. Whereas before, why would you go to Nebraska if you get a coach getting fired after 9 win seasons? Yeah. Which happened not once, but twice.
Yeah, I don't get that. Like the moment Nebraska went north and left the conference,
I think people are still just upset.
Stopped caring about them.
I think there are people so upset they're not in the conference. That's why they make fun of them.
Yeah, yeah. But for me, it's just like I just stopped caring about them because we've got 10 teams in this conference, just like there was.
You got enough to worry about now. Yeah,
I don't worry about it.
I'm with you. Top 25 college football review. Alabama rolls, but Tua is out for the season. Dislocated hip. They said it was just like, it's like the Bo Jackson injury, which gives me the heebie-jeebies because that ended his career, basically. I mean, he came back in baseball, but that was a shame that happened. With technology now, it looks like he'll probably be okay. Too bad Bo Jackson didn't have that technology back then. Man, I still would have loved to see Bo Jackson stay healthy the rest of his career and what he would have done. Penn State escaped over Indiana. Let's see, what was the other game? Oh, yeah, Georgia beat Auburn, held off Auburn late charge, 21-14. So those are kind of the big games in the top 25. The college football rankings will come out tomorrow night, and then people will argue and complain, or it'll be the exact same four, which, honestly, it should be. You know, I would imagine it will be. I don't think there'll be any changes. Minnesota lost, as predicted, on this show, and Baylor lost, as predicted, on the show, although Baylor obviously should have won when they're up 28-3 at home. MIAA? You know, Pittsburgh State ran it up. I don't know. I didn't watch the game. I'm just being a typical fan. Fort Hays State won 91-7 over Northeastern State. So what's their excuse not to hang 100? Northwest Missouri State won 45-23 over Central Missouri. Pitt State all over Missouri Southern 65-6. Pitt State lost 5 in a row after starting 5-0, finished 6-5. Washburn beat Nebraska Kearney 57-43, but didn't make the playoffs. Northwest Missouri State's in the playoffs. They won 45-23 over Central Missouri. Fort Hays State, on the outside looking in, did not make the playoffs either. So just one MIAA team going on to the playoffs, and that's Northwest Missouri State.
Central Missouri made it, too.
Oh, did they make it? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so two teams. Yep. Some years MIAA will get 3.
Yeah.
They only got 2. See, Kansas Wesleyans in the NAIA playoffs, they're number 3 seed. And they play Baker coming up, I believe it's this weekend. All right, let's go to the NFL, where the Chiefs are in action tonight versus the L.A. Chargers, Monday Night Football. And you can hear it on Z96.3 The Lake. The Chiefs looks like they got their whole offensive line back, and that could be, oh, that would be a nice boost for this team. They also have their quarterback back. Of course, came back last week, even though they lost. He threw for 446 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. Chiefs found a way to lose. Mahomes says he's feeling good going into tonight.
Yeah, I think I feel really good, honestly. And I mean, just going out there and being able to play the game, do the things that I've kind of grown accustomed to doing, of scrambling and doing all that different type of stuff, and coming out healthy was definitely a positive sign, and I'm glad that I can kind of keep moving forward with that.
So Mahomes feeling good. What about prepping for Mexico City? The altitude, 7,200 feet. That's 2,000 higher than Denver.
I mean, I'm just going to prepare like if we were playing at Arrowhead. And I mean, I'm just going to prepare myself for the game, knowing that that we're going to get to go into an amazing stadium and get to play in front of a great fan base. And I know that the team will have us ready to go whenever we get there.
It will be an interesting atmosphere. Remember, they were supposed to play Mexico City last year. The field, there were problems with it, so they moved the game back to L.A. when the Chiefs played the Rams. Andy Reid on the atmosphere of Mexico City.
They all come to the game because there's one game. So there's a buzz that takes place through the whole game. There's noise, which is great. I mean, that's a good thing. I think it's equal for both teams. But you're going to have to deal with some noise. There are a lot of people in that stadium, and they're excited for both teams to be there, and so there's going to be noise. We get that.
Well, last time the Chiefs met the Chargers, the Chiefs kind of blew it. It was a Thursday night game, and the Chargers, Chiefs had a chance to wrap up the division and everything else, and they couldn't hang on, and Chargers came back and won, and that got them going. And they ended up making the playoffs. They were kind of red hot at the time, but then they lost the next week to Baltimore, and the Chiefs then got it right back, and they got the number one seed and won the AFC West. Chargers struggling. They're 4-6. Chargers sense of urgency. They probably have to win out to make the playoffs. They lose tonight, then they're definitely got to win out just to be 9-7. And Andy Reid talks about the Chargers and what they are like since the last time they met.
They're a good football team. They're talented. They're well coached. So that's why we prepare for it. And they did. They got us. They're different teams now, but we needed to do better in that game. And we'll need to play good football in this game. So, and then nothing else matters. You got to go practice and make sure that you get yourself right to play against a good football team.
All right, so here's the injury report. Blake Bell's out, so no longer that 3rd-and-2 pass to Blake Bell. That one's out tonight. Instead, we'll go to Deion Elder. Emmanuel Ogba is out for the season with the torn pec. Alex Okafor is out, so two DNs, starting DNs, rotating DNs are out for the Chiefs. The good news, though, is Mitchell Schwartz is good to go. Sammy Watkins good. Frank Clark's good to go. Tardif is back. Eric Fisher's going to be back at left tackle, thank God. So Cam Irving can be on the bench for a little while. Kendall Fuller is questionable for tonight's game. Damian Williams, questionable for the game. So that means LeSean McCoy will be active, I would imagine. Interesting. He did not practice the last couple of days. They say it's not injury related.
No, some family issue.
Some family issue
to deal with. Yeah.
So he might not play tonight, and that would be a blow for the Chiefs unless Shady can hold on to the football. Chargers, they've got all kinds of injuries. They've had them throughout the year, although they've been getting a little bit healthier lately. But they have guys that are on the IR, doubtful tonight. But they still got Melvin Gordon. They've still got the Eckler kid that can run the football. And we know the Chiefs aren't very good against the run, at least most of the year. They were okay against Denver, and they were okay against the Vikings. And if LA Chargers, if they do what they're supposed to do, I think tonight it's you got to run the ball, establish your run. You do that, now Phillip Rivers can run play action. You can hurt the Chiefs in the passing game. But the Chiefs do pretty good against guys that sit in the pocket and don't move around a lot. Last week, Tannehill didn't move around a lot, but when he did, he killed the Chiefs with 3 runs for 37 yards and a key fourth down conversion. I don't think Rivers is going to do that to the Chiefs tonight. Listen, this is a game I can see it going either way, obviously. If the Chiefs lose, now the division, the Raiders would be in the lead by half a game. The Chargers would be a game back and have a tiebreaker. If Andy Reid's a great coach, I hate to put it all on one person because I've said before you can't put it all on one person, but the Chiefs better be prepared, and there better not be a whole bunch of lack of focus. There shouldn't be, mistakes tonight like they had against Tennessee. If I see some of those mistakes again against the Chargers tonight, I'm going to be really, really irate. This is a chance to put away a team that's somewhat dangerous in your division. You have a chance to put them away. And you also have a chance to stay atop the division, which is very important. And you got to bounce back from a really bad loss that you gave a game away. This is a game tonight. I expect the Chiefs. If the Chiefs are a Super Bowl contender, and I do believe they still are, I know they have flaws, but if you're going to go whining and ranting about how the defense is so bad, last year this defense was god-awful, and they were one offsides penalty away from being in the Super Bowl. So now the offensive line's getting healthy, and Watkins is healthy, and Hill is healthy, and Kelsey's fine. Mahomes is healthy. There's not even an ankle issue. Yeah, he's not quite as mobile with that, you know, that brace on his right knee. I get that. But this offense should be getting better as they get healthier. So to me, the Chiefs can be the same team they were last year. And if they're the same team they were last year, that was good enough to get home field advantage and one offside penalty away from being in the Super Bowl. Now, this year, they're going to have to be on the road in order to get to the Super Bowl. And they might not have any games at Arrowhead, just depending, maybe one if they win the division. But this team can win anywhere on the road. They've been really good on the road this year, except with the loss at Tennessee. Where they've struggled has been at home, believe it or not. So I expect the Chiefs, if they are a Super Bowl contender, they can make a statement tonight. Mexico City, they beat the Chargers, who have been up and down this year. They go out, they win. They're healthy on the offensive line. Protect Patrick Mahomes. Open up this passing game. If you think Mahomes is a little mobile, more mobile this week, go for it. Let it fly. And the Chiefs go out and play a good game. I expect the Chiefs to play a good game. If they are a Super Bowl contender and one of the best 10 teams in football, which we've all agreed they are, when you look around the league, they're still one of the top 10 teams. And you may say, that's crazy, but look around. It's true. Even without a good defense, the Chiefs should win this game tonight. And if they don't, and if they make some of the same mistakes, that does fall on Andy Reid as a head coach because he's ultimately responsible. But it also falls on the players and the coaching staff, and the defense continues to struggle against the run. And it was only out there for 22 minutes tonight and gives up, you know, 225 yards rushing. Then I'm probably, you know, my TV might be broken. It possibly could be, but I'm going to try to refrain from that. I'll probably just shake my head and be like, eh, that is, that's the Chiefs. This is a game, if you're a Super Bowl contender, you win. Simple as that. Oh, you win.
Question.
You win. And the Chargers are a good football team. They're 4-6. You are what your record is.
This Chargers team... clearly not as good as they were last year.
No. Are they capable of getting hot? Yes.
Yeah, always.
Yes.
It seems like always, like we talk about, that they at some point get hot during the season. They already have it for a little stretch this year. But yeah. I mean, if you want me back on that wagon, I guess tonight.
You're saying win tonight.
You
to get back
win
on that
you
wagon.
You have to.
I mean, I agree.
If you lose tonight, then there's no way I'm coming close to getting back on.
Why
that
would
wagon.
You?
They got to win.
If
tonight.
You're already off, why would you
I mean,
get on
if
they
you're
lose?
6-4. The Raiders are going to overtake the lead in this division if you don't win tonight.
Yes.
And nobody wants that.
No.
So go out, stay focused, and they'll be. I don't doubt that they'll be more focused tonight than they were against Tennessee.
I think week. The Chiefs are going to be fine tonight.
Yes.
But that's because
I do
still on the wagon.
You do like the fact that. You're healthy on the line.
Yeah, you're aligned. That's going to be nice unless you get hurt injury right off the bat. All right, so Chiefs at Chargers, but it's in Mexico City tonight, 7 o'clock, I think. Yeah, that's right, 6 o'clock. 6 o'clock pregame, 7:15 kickoff Monday Night Football. Yesterday, the Jets beat the Redskins 34-17. New Orleans wins by the same score for Tampa Bay. Denver was up 20-0 and lost at Minnesota. The Broncos just find ways to lose games. The Broncos are 3-7, and they should be 7-3.
Oh, yeah.
They're not that far away, and that's why they're still a dangerous team when they come to Arrowhead later in the year. Minnesota beats Denver 27-23, big win for the Vikings. Buffalo 7-3. They beat the Dolphins 37-20. Indianapolis beats Jacksonville 33-13, but lost their running back with a broken hand. He's going to miss at least a week. And Nick Foles back for Jacksonville. They manage just 13 points. Dallas, Dak Prescott a huge day, threw for over 400 as they beat Detroit 35-27. Atlanta break up the Falcons. What happened? They couldn't defend anybody. Last 2 weeks, they've been fantastic.
Yeah.
What did they change? And they should have done it sooner. Atlanta beats Carolina 29-3. Carolina's now 5-5. Baltimore blew out Houston. Now it's supposed to be a good game. Baltimore's the best team in football. They're the best team in football. I said it last week because they beat Seattle head-to-head by 14 early in the year. That's why I gave them the best team in football. They didn't hurt their cause yesterday. 41-7, Lamar Jackson the last four games has been insane. And right now, him and Russell Wilson are the MVP candidates. San Francisco beat Arizona. Did you see the fumble at the end of the game that allowed the Niners to cover the spread? If you had Arizona covering, you lost money on a stupid play at the end. I mean, it was silly. There was no need for it, but, you know, you're still trying to win somehow, Arizona, and it was a squirrely play, and DJ Reed, the former K-Stater, scored on a fumble recovery for a touchdown, and the Niners covered. You talk about a backdoor cover. 36-26 the final there. New England was down 10-0, and then Philadelphia's offense went stagnant. New England's not a very good offensive football team. Their defense keeps them in games. Their special teams is solid. Their offense has lots of issues, but their defense is good enough. And Philadelphia missing their two top wideouts due to injury, and New England took advantage of it, 17-10. Oakland beat Cincinnati. They were down early in that one. Oakland wins 17-10. They're 6-4, And on the heels of the Chiefs, the Rams over the Bears, Sunday Night Football, which was hard to watch, 17-7. Those two teams aren't even close to what they were last year. And, of course, Cleveland won on Thursday Night Football. So that's a wrap of the NFL. NASCAR, pretty exciting stuff. You got a champion again, and it's a champion that has been a champion before.
Nobody around him. What a performance he has put on this evening. 119 laps have been led. Kyle Busch, he's the winningest driver of the decade, and now he is joining elite company. Kyle Busch is going to win his second Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series championship.
Thank you,
boys. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy, right? Kyle and Kurt are loved by everyone in NASCAR. I have to admit, I don't follow NASCAR that closely, but I'm actually cheering against those guys. And then I see that they win. They're good drivers, though. You got to give them credit.
Yeah.
Great drivers. Here's Kyle and winning his second NASCAR Cup title as he was able to navigate and win and outrun Denny Hamlin, Kevin Harvick, and Martin Truex Jr. in the Ford EcoBoost 400. And it was a clever pit strategy that helped get the job done. Here's Busch on the win.
Honestly, I haven't thought about it because I didn't want to get too disappointed in the moment if it didn't happen. So, but to be a two-time champion, I mean, it just means so much to me and to my race team. I mean, yes, I get to take the notoriety and hold the trophy or whatever, but my guys is what it's all about for me, and being able to win a championship with all of them, with Adam Stevens and the race calls today on the box. You know, we didn't start off flashy or anything there, the fire off, but when the lights came on and the nighttime set in, car really came to life, felt really good. The adjustments kept helping each and every time, and we were up front when it mattered most and led all the way to the end there.
So Kyle Busch is your NASCAR champion here in 2019. Did you see what happened in the college basketball game at Allen Fieldhouse on Friday night between Monmouth and KU? Did you see what happened at the end of the game?
I didn't, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, I was on the road back.
You really need to start following things. You need to start following people other than K-Staters on Twitter.
Yeah.
Because KU wins over Monmouth 112-57. It was 110-55. Remember, this is the team Monmouth that led K-State by 9 at halftime.
Yeah.
So that doesn't bode well for K-State fans. I'm sure they see that and go, wow. But it's early. So it was 110-55, and KU is just dribbling the ball out with about 15 seconds to go. They're not running up any score. There's no Brandon Green late dunk or anything like that. They're being sportsmanlike, and so the guy, I think it's Inaruna, had his back to the defender, and all of a sudden this Pappas kid, I think his name is Pappas, for Monmouth. He goes from at the last moment with about 8-9 seconds left in the game, he decides, I'm going to pick the guy's pocket. So he goes from behind, picks the pocket, and throws down a vicious one-handed dunk. And then he starts, you know, there's some F-bombs being shot out, and he's, like, looking at people. I mean, he's just all fired up, and I don't know if he was mad because they were losing by that many points. I think he was a walk-on, too, by the way. So he slams it. Allen Fieldhouse, unbelievable dunk, and he gets a technical foul with, like, on the last play of the game. So then KU shoots two free throws. They win 112-57, and there's some KU fans upset because the guy dunked. I'm like, oh, my God. Seriously? Are you serious? You won by 53 points or 55 points. Why do you care if the guy dunked? Listen, if I could have done that, I would have done it, okay? And I would have enjoyed it, and I would have screamed. Now, I don't know if I would have got a technical. I don't know if I would have done any taunting, which it seemed like that's what he kind of did. I didn't see the play live. I saw the replays. But then there was, like, on Twitter, there was a poll. Do you have a problem with this guy dunking? I'm like, no. Brandon Green did it for KU at home. The problem in this equation would be if Monmouth was up by 55 and the guy picked the guy's pocket and dunked it. Yeah. There's the problem. If that was
KU sitting there with the ball in their hands, not picking a pocket or anything, and just finding an alley-oop or something like that, throwing down and making 112-55.
There'd be a problem with that. There would be a problem if Monmouth is dribbling out the ball and they're conceding the game, losing by 55, and KU, lock-on, goes and steals it and dunks it down the floor. That would be a problem. I'd call it running it up, blah, blah, blah. That would be insane. The teams have conceded. KU fans will say, listen, we conceded. We were dribbling the ball. You know what? Monmouth kid is a walk-on. He saw an opportunity. He went for it. He got a dunk. Now, a little bit too fired up and got the tee, which was somewhat hilarious to me. I thought the whole thing was hilarious.
Yeah.
If it was the roles were reversed and KU did that to somebody down by 55, I still wouldn't care. But if KU was up 55 and did that, that would be one of the most embarrassing things you ever did. So it's a matter of where you are on the scoreboard. So anyway, King Rice is the head coach of Monmouth, and there was some staring back at the student section. I'm sure they were riding the guy for the dunk. Listen, that kid's going to remember that for the rest of his life. A walk-on with a steal, not a legitimate steal because the guy was dribbling out the clock.
Yeah.
But still, I dunked it with a one-handed, ferocious slam dunk at Allen Fieldhouse. And, yeah, I got teed up at Allen Fieldhouse, baby. Yes, I did. I'm sure he might be proud of that later on in life. At least I'd be proud of the dunk. I don't know about everything afterwards. So King Rice, he's the head coach of Monmouth. They were at Manhattan on Wednesday, in Lawrence on Friday. And here is his response on what happened at the end of the ballgame.
First, I just want to start off, and I'm a super, super, super competitive guy. And we lost our cool a little bit here tonight at the end of the game. We're down by 100 points, and we get a dunk, and then we bark at the kid. That is uncalled for. That is not what our program represents. That is not what our program stands for. You get beat by a better team, you shake their hand, and you walk off the court, and you take in the experience. And we were, I think my kids' feelings were hurt because how we got dominated and we acted out of character. And then we ran off the court, and the kids were yelling back at your student section, and that is not who Monmouth basketball is. And we addressed it. That's what took me so long to get in here. This was a great experience for our school. Anytime you lose like that, there will be people that say, hey, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. Monmouth University got to play in Allen Fieldhouse in front of an awesome crowd with one of the best coaches in the country down the other end and one of the best programs in the history of our game. So this was really cool, even though we took the beating like we did. That can happen sometimes, but I'm happy that I got to coach here. I've been wanting to do this for a long time.
You know, if Mama would just run three-guard or four-guard lineup, that would have given more options, and they might have won the game. We lost by 55. I mean, I want to change things had they done that. There's a book into your show right there.
Yeah.
King Rice, the head coach, which I love that name, by the way, for Monmouth, talking about the experience, and he has it all in perspective. But I will say, that kid that had the walk-on that stole it and dunked it, he's being applauded and high-fived on campus today, I guarantee you.
Oh, yeah.
The technical and the way they acted after that, that was the part that wasn't so cool. But I can't be mad because a guy, you know, technically you're supposed to play to the final whistle. And K is dribbling out.
He's still playing.
The guy had a chance to get a bucket. Yeah. You know what? He might have been thinking cover the 55-point spread. It wasn't that high. But anyway, I don't blame the kid for doing it. He could have acted a little better afterwards. But if I could do that, I would have at least tried to steal it and dunk it. Yeah, why not? Especially when you're down 53, 55 points at the time. K-State's got Arkansas Pine Bluff tomorrow night. KU back in action tomorrow night. You can hear it on Z96.3 Lake with pregame at 6:30 as they'll host East Tennessee State. And then Kansas will go to the Maui Classic, and they might face number one Michigan State. Michigan State's number one again after Kentucky lost to Evansville at home this past week. And Wichita State, after struggling in their second game of the season, not a big problem on Saturday. They beat Tennessee Martin 103-62. Shockers are 3-0, and they'll continue the Cancun Challenge, the preliminary rounds at Coke Arena, coming up tomorrow night when they host Gardner Webb. Anything else to add before we let people go?
I think we covered it.
Busy weekend,
yes,
some crazy stuff. That's why we, that's why they play the game, so that we can recap and talk about it on a Monday here on the Sports Ticket. Have a great day, everyone.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.